Mary Jo Dudley, director of the Cornell Farmworker Program, faculty member at Cornell's University's Department of Global Development, and Estela Cisneros, speaking to us from Modesto, California, legal director of the California Rural Legal Assistance's Agriculture Worker Program. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Adriano Contreras. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Happy birthday. Happy first birthday, Miles.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor It Did Happen Here, Nothing is Final, discussion with Eric Ward and Scott Nakagawa on Thursday, March 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. This Zoom conversation is hosted by the Multnomah County Library. You can sign up for the event at the Multnomah County Library website under the events calendar for Thursday, March 4th. Scott Nakagawa and Eric Ward were interviewed for It Did Happen Here, the podcast about fighting neo-Nazis in Portland in the late 80s and early 90s. They'll talk about the work they did with the Coalition for Human Dignity and where the fight against white nationalists stands today. Again, that's It Did Happen Here, Nothing is Final. Registration happens on the Multnomah County Library website on their events calendar for Thursday, March 4th. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And we'll never rest again until every Nazi dies.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a group of state Democrats are trying to raise the minimum wage in Oregon to $17 an hour. Timber companies in the state say they can't afford a new timber tax, despite the logging industry being increasingly dominated by Wall Street and investment funds. And in international news, a deadly day in Myanmar yesterday, as at least 33 anti-coup protesters were killed by the state. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. I'm Althea Billings. The Oregon Health Authority reported 276 new cases of COVID-19 on Monday, bringing the total number of confirmed and presumptive cases in the state up to 156,287. Oregon health officials also reported 27 new deaths, raising the state's death toll to 2,252. Oregon has now administered over 1 million COVID vaccines, according to OHA Director Patrick Allen. He estimates the state delivers around 22,000 vaccines per day. The new Johnson & Johnson vaccine has been approved for use in Oregon, and OHA expects to receive 34,000 doses of the vaccine this week. The state announced on Tuesday that another new variant of coronavirus has been spotted, this time the one that originated in Brazil. This is the first report of the variant, called P1, to be found on the West Coast. The CDC warns there could be a fourth wave of infections coming, as new cases and hospitalizations went up last week after a month of decline. Nationally, the U.S. has reported at least 28.7 million cases of COVID-19. There have been more than 517,000 deaths across the country. About 16% of the U.S. population has received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, with 8% of the population fully vaccinated. Globally, the coronavirus pandemic has infected more than 114 million people in nearly every country. At least 2.5 million people have died across the world. On Tuesday, Texas Governor Greg Abbott announced masks will no longer be a mandated requirement in the state. Governor Abbott proclaimed this maskless to a cheers at a crowded restaurant in the city of Lubbock. He said, quote, "It is now time to open Texas 100%. With just 7% of Texas vaccinated compared to almost 16% nationwide, Texas will open businesses to full capacity while also ending its highly politicized mask mandate. About 43,000 Texans have died from the virus, and many Texans are still ineligible to get the vaccine." Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves also announced yesterday that his state would be lifting all COVID restrictions on businesses and ending the mask mandate there as well. Emily Tim is the co-executive director of Workers' Defense Action Fund. She said on Tuesday, quote, "I think this is a slap in the face of working people, especially frontline workers who have been risking their lives." Some officials are also worried about super spreader events over spring break, when students from around the country will gather on South Texas beaches and in the Rio Grande Valley. A new COVID education campaign will focus on the LGBTQ+ community, which a recent study has found is more vulnerable to COVID-19. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
The pandemic has had devastating impacts on the LGBTQ+ community, so the group Equality California, which has 1 million members, has launched a bilingual statewide education and outreach campaign. Unveiled on Tuesday, the idea is to make sure people know when and where to get the vaccine, and also to promote the science that shows the new coronavirus vaccines are safe and highly effective. Rick Chavez-Saber with Equality California says COVID-19 has taken a toll on the health and well-being of many in the LGBTQ+ community.
And that's particularly true for the most vulnerable members of our community, transgender and gender nonconforming people, LGBTQ+ people of color, and immigrants and people living with HIV or other pre-existing conditions.
The latest study from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has found the LGBTQ+ population is more vulnerable to COVID, in part because it also has higher rates of underlying health conditions, including cancer and HIV. Last fall, researchers at UCLA surveyed more than 12,000 American adults on the impact of the pandemic. Study co-author Kareth Conran says the numbers show COVID-19 has been especially prevalent among non-white LGBTQ+ people.
LGBT people of color were more likely to be positive, about twice as likely as non-LGBT white people.
Last spring, the Equality Institute launched a telephone helpline and an online help center at covid19.eqca.org to link people to employment services, food assistance, culturally competent health care providers, and testing centers. The bilingual portion of the site will be launched in the coming weeks. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A small group of Oregon Democrats have filed a bill that would increase the state's minimum wage from $11.50 in some areas to $17 statewide. For someone working 40 hours a week, that would mean a yearly income of $35,000. The proposed minimum wage increase bill has five Democratic co-sponsors in the House, but Democratic leaders have not listed the bill as a priority. That likely means it has little chance of passing, especially with Republicans in the State House choosing to walk out as a strategy to avoid any real change in the legislature. Under provisions from a law passed in 2016, Portland's minimum wage is set to increase to just shy of $15 an hour in 2022. That isn't the case across the state, which is what the proposed House Bill 3351 hopes to remedy by creating minimum wage equality in the state of Oregon as well as raising it. Oregon's timber industry says it can't afford a new timber tax, despite record-high lumber prices and increased company profits. Legislators are considering whether to increase taxes paid by the logging industry, which is increasingly dominated by Wall Street real estate trusts and investment funds. One proposal is to reinstate a severance tax of 5% based on the value of trees at the time that they're cut down. Brooks Mendel is the president of the forest investment consultancy Forsic. They told OPB that some small-scale timber owners lost much of their timber in last year's wildfires, and others lost valuable equipment. But large corporations and lumber manufacturers are thriving. 30 years ago, Oregon lawmakers began giving the state's timber industry tax cuts that have cost rural counties an estimated $3 billion, diminishing local budgets for services and education. Several police officers in West Lynn are accused of racial harassment during a wrongful DUI arrest in December. West Lynn resident and former city council candidate Alex Juarez was arrested on December 21st. According to his statement, he was followed home after dropping flowers off at his girlfriend's house. The man who followed him got out of his vehicle and claimed to be a former police officer. Juarez says he thought the man was going to ask for directions, but instead he started yelling racial slurs and telling Juarez to, quote, come here. According to Juarez's account, the man had a holstered gun and called police to report Juarez was acting drunk and belligerent, saying he followed Juarez home because he was driving erratically. Three West Lynn police officers arrived at Juarez's house within minutes, and the man seemed to know them personally, according to Juarez. After announcing they didn't have a breathalyzer, the police officers demanded he take a field sobriety test, even as Juarez tried to explain he has a speech impediment and a tendon syndrome that would make it impossible for him to pass the heel-to-toe part of the test. He says having to do the test even after he pleaded with officers was humiliating and painful. Officers then took Juarez to the police station, where a breathalyzer test found his blood alcohol concentration to be 0%. After 3.5 hours detained at the station, he was finally permitted to go home. The FBI says definitively that Antifa was not involved in the January 6th Capitol riot. With more on that story and a few others, we go to Mary Sherman with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times. The U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments Tuesday on two voting rights cases out of Arizona. At issue, an appeals court ruling that overturned a law restricting how ballots are collected, and another that would allow ballots cast in the wrong precinct to be thrown out. Michael Carvin, the attorney representing the Arizona RNC, was asked by Justice Amy Coney Barrett about the party's interest in keeping the rules on the books.
Because it puts us at a competitive disadvantage relative to Democrats. Politics is a zero-sum game.
Attorney Jessica Amundson presented arguments protecting voter rights on behalf of the Arizona Secretary of State.
The out-of-precinct policy and the ballot collection statute impose discriminatory burdens on Native American, Latino, and Black voters that are not justified by any legitimate state interest.
The House could approve a voting rights bill today that gives more protection. The For the People Act would end gerrymandering, improve ballot access, and reduce the influence of money on campaigns. Freshman Democratic Congressman Mondaire Jones of New York supports the legislation.
Many people were surprised that I defeated a billionaire who tried to purchase this congressional seat. But my election should not be the exception to the rule. Rather, it should be the norm.
Yesterday, the House rejected an amendment that would have allowed incarcerated people and former felons to vote. In the Senate, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer expects President Joe Biden's COVID relief bill to pass this week using the budget reconciliation process, which limits debate and allows passage with a simple majority. Biden says enough COVID vaccines will be available for every adult in the country by the end of May. The administration is invoking the Defense Production Act to ramp up production of the newly authorized Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Neera Tanden withdrew her nomination for head of the Office of Management and Budget amid opposition regarding controversial social media posts, but the Senate confirmed Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo as Secretary of Commerce and Cecilia Rouse as the first Black chair of the White House Economic Council. Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chair Bob Menendez questioned Biden's rationale for last week's Syrian airstrikes. The New Jersey Democrat called for a White House briefing. Senators also introduced bills to expand federal background checks. As a survivor of bystander gun violence, Greg Jackson Jr. with the Community Action Fund notes that gun homicide has a disparate impact on African Americans.
For our communities, this is not a political issue. This isn't a political priority. This is literally life or death.
A similar House-passed measure was rejected by the Republican-controlled Senate in 2019. Testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee, FBI Director Chris Wray refuted claims that Antifa members participated in the Capitol attack. He said that many suspects appear to be connected to militia groups.
So we've got a number who self-identify with, you know, the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers, things like that.
Wray confirmed Capitol Police were sent an early FBI warning about serious violence. Police leaders say the message was never passed through proper channels. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for listening.
33 anti-coup protesters were killed in Myanmar yesterday in the deadliest day yet. This is a major escalation, as previously the military and police had killed a total of 40 since the coup on February 1st. At least 1,300 people have been detained since the military seized power, including the country's ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi and the president Win Myint. Foreign ministers from the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, of which Myanmar is a member, met on Tuesday. But only four members, Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Singapore, called for the release of Aung San Suu Kyi and other detainees. The UN Security Council is expected to meet about the Myanmar situation on Friday, but as China and Russia have previously blocked attempts to pressure Myanmar's military, coordinated actions remain unlikely. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for COVID Noise Filter, where infectious disease and community health experts explore coronavirus news. Then at 5:45, it's News from the Boo with co-station manager Jenna Yokoyama. It's your look at the news inside KBOO. Tonight's weather will be clear with a low of 37 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will bring scattered showers and a high of 61. On this day in 1968, a COINTELPRO memorandum was sent to FBI field offices around the country with the objective of blocking African American groups from existing and growing. The FBI believed that these efforts would prevent the rise of a, quote, Black Messiah, and regarded Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. as primary targets. The quote of the day is from King, who said, quote, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter." Senate is scheduled to hold a meeting to further consider the nomination of Representative Deb Haaland for Secretary of the Interior. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources is scheduled to hold a business meeting Thursday to consider the nomination of Deb Haaland for Secretary of the Interior. The business meeting follows a two-day confirmation hearing last week where Haaland answered questions from committee members, including being repeatedly grilled about the oil and gas industry and her views on climate and the environment. As key lawmakers publicly announced their support or opposition, a number of tribal leaders, directors of Native organizations, advocates, and allies are urging Congress to confirm Haaland, making calls, writing letters, promoting a petition, and using social media with the hashtag Deb for Interior. The Cherokee Nation is including all household members of Cherokee citizens and any federally recognized tribal member in phase 3 of its COVID-19 vaccination plan. Health officials say protecting the community means vaccinating everyone. The Oklahoma tribe has administered more than 27,000 vaccines so far. Those who meet phase 3 criteria are being asked to make an appointment with the health center. Other tribal health clinics across the country are also expanding vaccinations. This week, the Alaska Native South Central Foundation in Anchorage opened COVID-19 vaccination appointments to Alaskans 40 years and older. The vaccine clinic is also open to educators and child care workers as supply allows. In Bristol Bay communities in Alaska, one feature of daily life that has stayed constant during the pandemic is subsistence. A school recognized that and decided to incorporate it into the classroom. KDLG's Brian Venwa spoke with teachers and students about how that's changed learning this year.
Audrey Panamarioff is a senior at Chief Ivan Blunka School in New Stuyahok. She's one of the students in the school's new subsistence class and says it's a great opportunity to learn about and practice subsistence skills.
I think that this class gives opportunities to students who can't or aren't able to go out at home.
Another student, a junior, Gusty Blunka Jr., says he appreciates the opportunity to share stories and learn more about his culture.
I'm hoping to learn more about what our people do and maybe even live the story that we were told. Then one day, tell my stories, teach and help others by passing on what's passed on to me.
Josh Gates is one of the teachers. He says the class is another way for students to learn and practice a wide range of skills related to subsistence.
The obvious ones are knowing how to properly use a chainsaw, or knowing how to make a nice fishing pole, knowing how to tie a fishing hook. But the less obvious ones are, how to maintain your tools and machines that are necessary.
Principal Robin Jones says it's a way to better align the school's curriculum with the community's traditional lifestyle.
Nothing makes me prouder as a principal than to see how eager students are to share stories and pictures of their hunts with me, because they know I will be so incredibly proud of them.
In Dillingham, I'm Brian Venwa.
The Foundation for Individual Rights in Education filed a lawsuit against Haskell Indian Nations University and its president, Ronald Graham, on Tuesday on behalf of the student newspaper's editor. The lawsuit alleges student Jared Nally's rights were violated. In October, the president sent him a directive trying to restrict journalism and free speech, Nally told the Lawrence Journal World. Allegations also include the tribal college located in Lawrence, Kansas, withheld more than $10,000 for the paper's use. Graham did not respond to comments about the federal lawsuit. The directive has since been rescinded. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new survey shows most people in the United States are worried and frustrated about healthcare costs. Lily Bolke has more on the story.
A new survey says most Americans are worried about out-of-pocket healthcare costs, deductibles, premiums, and copays, and Nevadans are no exception. Stephanie Riska Kennedy of Las Vegas has a 4-year-old with severe hemophilia who needs expensive medication with no generic substitute. She says her insurance provider offers a policy that would have left her family with $7,000 a year in copays. Her son has qualified for a program that allows them to navigate around the policy, but she points out many other folks don't have that option.
It puts a lot of stress on the families, and it makes them start to rethink, okay, should we be finding somewhere to live that's cheaper so we can save the money? Should we get another part-time job to come up with the cost so that we can continue these medications?
In the survey from the group Consumers for Quality Care, 72% of respondents said they struggle to budget because of the unpredictability of out-of-pocket medical costs, and nearly 15% of Nevadans pay more than 10% of their annual household income for insurance premiums, which is higher than the national average. Kelly Gonzalez, a chronic disease educator in Las Vegas, has also had to jump through hoops to get medications for her family because of policies aimed at reducing costs for insurance companies. She says in order to implement these cost-cutting policies, more flexibility is needed.
But those 30% of the population that do have to have name brand or that do have to have copay assistance or that can't go in and out of the hospital, those are the people that I worry about. I'm one of those people. My husband's one of those people. Our children are those people.
Jason Resendez with Consumers for Quality Care notes for those who are most susceptible to COVID-19, such as people with underlying health conditions like diabetes or hypertension, preventative care is critical.
It's these high premiums and copays and deductibles that really create a barrier to preventative care and create, I think, susceptibility to COVID and possibly to future pandemics.
7 in 10 people surveyed feel insurance companies are, quote, nickel and diming them. And while most said they want healthcare system reforms, a majority also agreed any changes need to be made carefully as the nation recovers from the pandemic. For Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wishes reality would lose touch with him.
Since Biden won't fight to double the minimum wage, maybe he and the other salaries should be cut in half. Americans need COVID relief and higher wages more than Syria or any country needs to be bombed, more than we need to sell more weapons abroad or to sanction other countries into starvation and disease. A lot of Biden skeptics are now saying, told you so, but what if Trump's delusions had come true, as Donnie's accusing Biden of doing the various things he's done himself and still denying reality? Actually reshaping reality is Texas Governor Greg Abbott ending the state's mask mandate and opening up all businesses, unrestricted and unregulated, just like the power companies there. What could go wrong? Maybe Texas should secede. And the reality in Oregon is there's nowhere enough vaccines. Biden says there'll be enough for all by end of May, another promise. And even if there were, we haven't the capability to deliver them. So stay real, masked, and be patient. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
A massive wilderness protection bill that would protect more than 3 million acres of public land has passed in the House and is now heading to the Senate. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
A massive public lands bill now headed to the U.S. Senate would better protect more than 3 million acres of public land, including 1 million acres in California. The Protecting America's Wilderness and Public Lands Act combines 8 pieces of legislation, including 4 that cover the Golden State. Belinda Faustinos with the nonprofit Nature for All says bills like the San Gabriel Mountain Foothills and Rivers Protection Act will make the wilderness experience much more accessible to families.
The U.S. Forest Service has managed the San Gabriel Mountains for purposes of water supply, which is critically important. However, there was very little attention paid to how it could be managed as a recreational resource.
In addition, the Central Coast Heritage Protection Act would benefit the Los Padres National Forest and the Carrizo Plain National Monument and would designate a 400-mile National Scenic Trail from L.A. to Big Sur. The Northwest California Wilderness Recreation and Working Forests Act would protect more than 300,000 acres, encourage wildfire prevention, and boost the outdoor economy. But opponents argue the changes could hamper jobs in logging, oil and gas development, and mineral extraction. Kate Hoyt with the Vet Voice Foundation supports the bills, saying public lands have played a pivotal role in helping veterans recover from the stress of deployments.
There's 1.8 million living veterans in California right now, and the ability to access these public lands has made it easier to transition back to civilian life, whether that's reconnecting with family and friends or hunting, fishing, hiking, and finding time and peace and solitude in the outdoors.
A fourth bill, the Rim of the Valley Corridor Preservation Act, would add 191,000 acres to the Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area in L.A. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael. The producer is Nat Moon, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Lily Bolke, Antonia Gonzalez, Suzanne Potter, and Mary Sherman. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 9, it's Fight the Empire, bridging history and current events. At 9:30, it's Radio Zine, which brings us intriguing public affairs programming. At 10, we'll tune in for Flashpoints, investigative journalism with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, it's Between the Covers, featuring interviews with locally and nationally known authors. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk. Black Book Talk is a monthly program featuring interviews and discussions of works by African American authors. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or use our mobile app and click on donate. Stay tuned now for Noise Filter.
My name is Dr. Mark Allen Derry, and I'm an infectious diseases specialist in New Orleans.
Hi, my name is Doc Griggs, and I'm a community medicine doctor and health literacy expert. This is the Noise Filter Podcast, where an infectious diseases physician,
that's me, and a health literacy and communications expert,
that's me, talk about what you need to know about COVID-19.
You can find more information about this show and our other daily live updates and Q&A show at noisefiltershow.com.
So let's get started.
All right, welcome to Noise Filter. This is Dr. Mark Allen Derry. Doc Griggs is not able to be with us today, so let's go ahead and get started.
Pandemic hurts college attendance amongst Latino students. Now, over the past few years, more Latino students have enrolled in higher education than the United States has ever seen before. From 2016 to 2017, Hispanic students were one of only two demographics that saw an increase in college attendance, and the number of college-enrolled Latinos in the nation has doubled since 2000. So that's great news. Now, this headway occurred as college enrollment overall has seen a steady decline. So that's even greater news. So even despite that there is a decline, we are seeing this amazing increase in minority students, particularly of the Latinx community in university. So this is great. But this progress may have been hindered by the pandemic. This year, the number of Latino undergrads decreased by 5%, and schools with Black and Latino populations saw a 26% decline in students attending college. According to the Washington Post, the pandemic affected attendance and grades for students, making them less competitive to colleges, while their families faced financial hardship. Some students have had to prioritize immediate family support over the long-term goal of college. For one student, those impediments were enough for her to even question applying to college altogether. Aye. There's also been a decline in federal student aid applications amongst Latino students. Schools with Latino enrollment of 75% or higher saw an 18% drop in applications for the upcoming school year, and the nation overall has seen a 10% decrease. Oy. While some four-year colleges have seen upticks in applications in the past few months, almost half of Latino students go to community college, which are struggling to enroll students for the next year. And according to the Post, some educators are concerned that will keep these students from attending college at all. The decline in applications from fee waiver and first-generation applicants, many of whom are Latino, has a variety of causes, but in the end, it's the same result. In fact, research shows that students that do not apply in their senior year of high school are unlikely to attend college at all. So we'll continue to follow this story. It is so important, as we do know that college and attending university, for those who do want, is really one of the great equalizers we have in our society. Lawmakers advocate for mental health days for students in the pandemic. Now, the pandemic has taken a mental toll on so many, including young people. As a result, more and more states are looking at ways to give students mental health days to reduce youth suicide and lessen the stigma of mental health issues. Now, according to ABC News, Utah lawmakers have searched for ways to reduce an alarming rate of youth suicides for the past few years. The coronavirus pandemic has added urgency to that search because it has multiplied the pressures on kids all over the country, as many have spent almost a full year doing remote learning, being isolated from their friends and classmates. Compared to 2019, the portion of children's emergency room visits related to mental health was 44% higher in 2020. Mental health professionals are concerned about the potential long-term mental and academic effects that students may face from the pandemic. In addition to growing reports of anxiety and depression, many students say that they just don't feel like they're absorbing class material virtually and they're not getting enough support. For some students, this can lead to increased self-harm and suicide. Utah and Arizona proposed legislation that would add mental or behavioral health to a list of reasons students can be absent from class, so that's good. It would be treated as the same thing as staying out of school with a physical illness, and similar laws have passed in Oregon, Maine, Colorado, and Virginia in the past 2 years. Deeble Plotnick, Vice President of Mental Health America, said offering mental health days can help children and parents communicate and prevent struggling students from falling behind in school or even ending up a crisis. We know that this year has been extra hard for young people, and that's why it's so essential that students feel comfortable to come forward and say they need to take some actions to support their mental health. The history of hand washing. So hand washing is a process that we're all familiar with, or we should be in our daily lives. Now, proper and effective hand washing is more important than ever. However, there was a time in which society existed without hand washing, allowing diseases to spread at heightened rates. Today, we explore the history of hand washing and how one man discovered a precedent to better protect people from disease. In the 1840s, Hungarian Dr. Ignaz Semmelweis, Dr. Semmelweis, by the way, is my hero. I have gone to his birthplace as well as where he's buried in Hungary, as well as the Dr. Semmelweis Museum. So yes, Dr. Semmelweis is a big hero. So in the 1840s, a Hungarian doctor, Dr. Semmelweis, was working at the maternity clinic. He noticed that many women were dying from puerperal fever or childbed fever, which essentially is caused by a group A strep, or what's also referred to as streptococcal pyogenes. So Dr. Semmelweis conducted an experiment in which he compared data from two maternity wards, one staffed by male doctors and medical students, the other staffed by female midwives. And comparing the deaths of each ward, he found that women died at a rate of 5 times higher in the male staffed ward than the female staffed ward. After more research, Dr. Semmelweis determined the culprit was the sanitation differences of the two wards. The doctors and medical students had spent time performing barehanded autopsies right before helping women in the maternity ward. Semmelweis found out that they had transferred a bacterial disease from the corpses that they were working on directly to women in the maternity ward, exposing them to the risk of childbed fever. So Semmelweis responded by requiring his medical staff to clean their hands and medical instruments with soap and chlorine solutions before procedures. Ironically, Semmelweis selected chlorine not because he thought it was more effective, but because he thought it was best to eliminate bad odor from autopsies. Though hand washing is widely accepted today, Semmelweis was not met with such acceptance when he first hypothesized the solution. Many doctors shamed Semmelweis' theory because it made them look guilty of causing sickness and death. Despite this adversity, Semmelweis continued to argue the validity of his findings and the importance of hand washing. And in this fight, he lost his job and credibility by the medical community and unfortunately was committed to a mental asylum. And after that, about 2 weeks later, he died after being badly beaten and mistreated. It wasn't until years following his death that the idea of germ theory began to become discovered and accepted, and a great amount of credit is given to Dr. Semmelweis's groundbreaking work. And so to Dr. Semmelweis, I do want to say a couple of words. One thing that I've always wondered is, when I wash my hands, technically, is that a germicide? I always hated washing my hands with hot water, but I'm starting to warm up to it. I used to be a pro at washing my hands, but now I'm all washed up. That's right. I'm here all night, guys. You know, I've been washing my hands so much that now I think they're greeting me. That must be because of my hygiene. Get it? Hygiene. All right, one last one. My daughter was just complaining about washing dishes by hand, and I said, better than washing them by foot. Dr. Semmelweis, you are truly a hero and an idol of mine, and we can't thank you enough for advancing the medical field the way that you did.
Hi, everyone. My name is Celeste, and I'm one of the writers here at Noise Filter. Today, I'll be sharing information with you about the mixed messaging of vaccine priority of teachers. So, with the constant evolving of vaccine prioritization, teachers' eligibility continues to be a question. New CDC guidelines support the reopening of schools, as studies indicate that transmission is not heightened by in-person schooling. In fact, as long as social distancing and mask wearing are enforced, transmission remains unaffected. As vaccination distribution continues upon the reopening of schools, concern for whether teachers' eligibility for the vaccine has surfaced. As a college student myself, and as the daughter of a professor, the developing topic of teachers and vaccine priority has been present in many of my conversations lately. Stated that vaccinations for teachers are not a, quote, prerequisite, end quote, for opening schools. As the studies conducted support that schools can open safely regardless of transmission levels of the region, the CDC has not yet indicated that teachers need to be vaccinated to return to school. However, the Biden administration, among others, has released mixed messaging on whether or not teachers should move up the line to be vaccinated. Both statements of support for teachers to begin being vaccinated and statements more along the lines of that of the CDC have surfaced from the administration. Ultimately, the amended statement has come to be that they can't yet require states to prioritize vaccinating teachers. So which one is it? Here in New Orleans, teachers have been approved to receive the vaccination. Phase 1A includes healthcare workers and nursing home residents and staff. Phase 1B includes people 65 or older, law enforcement, teachers, and people between the ages of 55 and 64 that have pre-existing health conditions. While teachers have moved up the priority list here, this is not the consistent rule across all regions of the country. In other parts, teachers are not yet eligible for vaccinations, even though their school may be reopening. The lack of cohesion across the nation of who can get a vaccine and when continues to be a limitation of more effective vaccine rollout. The good news is that there is a way to safely go back to school in person if the rules of COVID safety are enforced. The risk for teachers and students comes with the lack of rules being followed, such as social distancing and mask wearing at all times. For teachers like my mom, they eagerly await to get in line for the vaccine as well as return to in-person teaching safely.
Ecuador clinic injected people with fake COVID-19 vaccine. Ay, ay, ay. Come on. Okay, as more and more people seek out the COVID-19 vaccine, unfortunately, some people see it as an opportunity to take advantage of others. Grr. An alternative medicine center in Ecuador was shut down by police for injecting thousands of people with a fake COVID-19 vaccine. Oh my goodness. According to Time magazine, the center was giving out shots of an unknown substance for $15 and telling people that they would become immune to the COVID-19 after three doses. So that would be $45. Great. There you go. After interviewing witnesses and people who had visited the center, police authorities believe the center had given up 70,000 doses of the shot. In interviews with local media, the center's owner admitted it was not giving out vaccines, but vitamins and serums to boost the patient's immunity and other treatments to cure the disease. She also claimed to have treated approximately 20,000 people with coronavirus at her center. Yeah, right. As the COVID-19 vaccine rollout has begun globally in the past month or so, vaccine-related scams have been reported in several countries. In the U.S., the FBI has warned of several emerging scams as late as last year, including offers to buy priority access to the vaccine or phone calls soliciting personal information to arrange a vaccine appointment. In fact, in the U.K., the National Health Service said in January that people are receiving fraudulent emails and text messages pretending to be from the NHS that demand people's banking information before a vaccine can be given. God bless these scammers. What is wrong with these people? Why do you take advantage of folks? Please be mindful of potential scams surrounding the vaccine. If you're being offered a vaccine but you have to give up sensitive information first, this is likely a scam, and I have to say, please, please, please don't do it. Recognize that you're being scammed. And for you scammers that are doing this, shame on you. Please crawl back under the rock from which you emerged. You're not worthy of engaging in decent society, and it's folks like you that make jobs like ours so much more difficult. Please go away. Just as a reminder that COVID-19 and the human immunodeficiency virus do share the same risk factors. Doc Griggs?
Thanks for listening to the Noise Filter Daily Podcast. Dr. Derry and I have a daily show at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time where we go into more detail on stories and answer your questions about COVID-19.
You can find Doc Griggs at DocGriggs1 on social media, and you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at DRDERY. You can follow us at NoiseFilter on Instagram, NoiseFilterNola on Twitter, and for more information about us and the show, you can go to NoiseFilterShow.com. Hey, Doc Griggs, any last words?
Remember, get checked, get fit, get moving. And remember to get some rest to boost your immune system. And Doc?
Protect yourself and others by staying home, and please wear masks when you go outside. Remember, health is a human right.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.